I'm Teresa Steger from the Principal PLN Podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure you check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And get ready, because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back. Today I'm talking with Scott Schickler. He's the author and CEO of The Seven Mindsets. The Seven Mindsets approach is focused not so much on what a person knows, but how she or he thinks. Yeah, this is cool stuff. Lots to learn. Glad you're here. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Noted as one of the world's leading experts on personal empowerment, Scott Schickler is a sought-after speaker, thought leader, and best-selling author. Scott is the founder and CEO of The Seven Mindsets, an education company serving millions of students and educators around the world. Scott has authored and co-authored 8 books, including The Seven Mindsets to Live Your Ultimate Life. He has been featured in a variety of media, including CNN, ABC, and NBC News, The New York Times, and The Wall Street Journal. A graduate of Fordham University, Scott grew up in New York and now lives in Atlanta with his wife and 2 sons. In addition to his role with Seven Mindsets, he is the co-founder of the Magic Wand Foundation, a nonprofit organization devoted to empowering youth to live their dreams. Say hello to everyone, Scott.
Hey, how are you?
Well, it's awesome to have you here, and I love the Seven Mindsets book, and I'm looking forward to talking to you about it. But before we do that, you're a you got this entrepreneurial focus, and I was wondering what brought you into the education world.
Yeah, sort of by accident. I was out there running businesses. I've always been an entrepreneur ever since I was a child. I didn't grow up wealthy, and so, you know, if I wanted to go to the movies with my friends and I asked my mom for some money, she'd look at me and she'd say, you know, I'm not an ATM machine, you know, and I'd say, Mom, but there's a minimum age for me to go get a job. And she said, well, there's no minimum age to start your own business. So I sort of learned entrepreneurship at an early age. And when I was an entrepreneur running a company just out of college, someone actually invited me to come talk to some fourth graders. And I said, what am I going to talk to fourth graders about? And they said, talk to them about business, entrepreneurship. I said, are they going to be interested? And even if they are, can they comprehend this? And they said, just come on out and talk. And I'll never forget this. I walked in on a Saturday afternoon to a boys and girls club. There was like 40 fourth graders in the room.
Wow.
I wasn't even sure what I was going to say. And I just thought to ask this question. I said, is there anyone here who may be interested in starting your own business now or sometime in the future? And every hand went up and they leaned in, and I was a little taken aback by it. And one of the kids said, well, you know, Mr. Schickler, what do I have to do to start my own business? And I actually wasn't even prepared to give that answer. And the slight pause in my voice sent a message to the counselor in the room that maybe she needed to answer. And she said, well, look, you better finish elementary school, middle school, high school, go to college, write a huge business plan, raise a lot of money. And then you got like a 7 in 10 chance of failing. And all these kids, I could see them slump down in their seats. And there was something so familiar about what she had said that I had heard in my own life. But I knew through experience that there were other ways. And so I said, well, you know, that's true. That's one way. But I passed a wholesaler on the way in here. And if you want to start a business, meet me next Saturday. I'll take you in. I'll give you a $10 grant and I'll show you how to do it. And every kid showed up, and I kept volunteering my time. And I think that's when I got hooked on classroom education. I realized that if I could connect what kids were interested in the real world to education, then they were bright-eyed and they were interested and they were engaged. No one ever, you know, didn't show up for one of my classes. And that got me hooked in education. I've been doing all different forms for the last couple of decades.
That's awesome. That is so cool. And I could just imagine, because, you know, and by the way, I am hearing hints of the future book that we're getting ready to start talking about. And it is sad when someone right off the bat starts making them lose that excitement when you're there to create the excitement. So
yeah, and you know what? She meant well. And, yes. that's the thing, is that oftentimes what I've learned over the last couple of decades in education is that we often mean well. We experience pain in our lives, and therefore we don't want our children or our students to experience pain. And sometimes that robs them of their own experience in learning and growing. I remember this little girl way back in that classroom telling me that she wasn't good in math. And then we set up a little flea market table, and I'm watching her make change, and she was brilliant with money math.
Nice.
And as soon as I pointed that out, her whole outlook changed. And kids would say, I don't like to write. And I'd say, good, because I'm going to teach you how to write a business memo. And here's the thing about writing business memos. They need to be as short and concise as possible. So they're like, wait a second, you mean I don't have to write these really long pages? I said, no, that's a business memo. They end up writing more. In fact, when I would ask them to do homework later on, I'd say, by the way, all homework is in business memo format. So they took it more seriously.
Nice.
But they'd write more.
Very nice. I know a few people that could use some of that advice about short, you know. Short is better, right? Less
right.
is more. I like that. That's good. So let's shift to the seven mindsets to live your ultimate life. Who's the primary audience and why?
Well, the primary audience is really anyone that's interested in getting their life to the next level, whatever that means for them. But my team and I wrote the book really so that this information would be delivered to young people. And equally as important, those who dedicate their lives to empowering and inspiring them. And those are educators and parents. So while anyone can pick up the book, learn the strategies of some of the world's happiest and most successful people, and actually apply them in their own life and see and feel the results immediately, even though that's possible, really what we focus on through our efforts is putting the book in the hands of educators first and foremost, and parents second, so that they can use this information to help inspire and empower their own students and children.
Awesome. That's awesome. And I got to tell you, the book, it's perfect, because, you know, whoever reads this, because I really want teachers and administrators to read this book as they're, you know, thinking about as they work with the children that they work with, so that they can kind of think about these types of mindsets. And it's cool. What a great word. Let me just say that it really fits well. I can see the different audiences where this is going to work well. And by the way, nobody's paying me to say this, by the way. I just want to make sure you all know that. Early in the seven mindsets, this question is asked: what do the ultra successful have in common? And the answer is, simply put, it's the way they think. Can you talk a little bit about this? And I would love it if you kind of get into the comment about this. There's a little thing in there you get into about dream bigger.
Sure. Well, maybe the way to frame this is, we all know happy people, and we all probably know some people who are miserable, and we know some people that we might define as successful. And unfortunately, we also know a lot of people who are just not living to their potential. And my team had a simple question: what are the happiest, most successful people in the world have in common? Because I don't think I've ever met a parent or an educator who didn't want their student or child to grow up to live their best life. I don't think I've ever met a kid who didn't want to be able to achieve whatever that meant, you know, live to their own potential. And so we studied happy and successful people to find out what they had in common. And, you know, in doing this, it took multiple years. We interviewed over 500 people. We studied thousands of people. We deconstructed over 200 of the most renowned books on the subject of happiness and success. Steve, we even researched other research projects that we knew came before us. Dr. Martin Seligman had like a $50 million study on global happiness, and we folded his research into our research. And Napoleon Hill went around interviewing 500 of the most successful entrepreneurs over a 30-year period, and he wrote his results in a, you know, in the famous book Think and Grow Rich, and we folded his research into our research. And the bottom line is that, you know, happy and successful people I mean, happiness really has nothing to do with your gender, nothing to do with your religious beliefs, your political views, where you live in the world. It really has very little to do with whether you grow up rich, middle class, poor, whether you come from a loving home or, as some might describe, as a dysfunctional or broken home. I mean, all of these things are really just surface attributes. Happiness and success have very little to do with the skills that you develop throughout your life, and schools, you know, tend to focus on skill sets. And even when you're out of school, companies spend money on skill set training. These are really just surface attributes. What we were able to identify is that some of the world's happiest and most successful people, what they have in common, it's not who they know, it's not what they know, but it's how they think. It's their mindsets. And in particular, we were able to identify seven mindsets.
That's awesome. When you talk about all that research that you're studying, as well as the research that you did on your own, bringing that into play, you know, getting back to something you said in the beginning is that, you know, when you run into people who seem to just be very happy, they sometimes do have a different way of, you know, kind of, they have this focus on the world that's is a lot different. And one of the things that I love is I'm going to read the seven mindsets to everybody here in just a second. And, but the first one is my you know, very favorite. And so here it is. So everyone listening, the seven mindsets in the book are, first off, everything is possible. Passion first. We are connected. 100% accountable. Attitude of gratitude. Live to give. And the time is now. And, you know, that everything is possible one just comes out when you read a lot from the current or past. You hear that like there's no tomorrow, that they see, you know, they see beyond all the different barriers that are in their way, and they actually see just, I could do this.
They have higher expectations. And this is what you were alluding to earlier about dreaming bigger. They tend to dream bigger. You know, one of my favorite interviews, and I got to interview a lot of famous people, very exciting. You know, I got to interview a lot of people actually own their own airplane, but one person in particular owned his own airline, and you probably know the name Sir Richard Branson.
Yes.
You know, famous for all the Virgin companies, Virgin Music, Virgin Airlines, and I remember interviewing him, and he wanted to be interviewed in New York City. Well, that's where I grew up, and so he flies his own airline, you know, to New York City. He owns his own limousine company, Virgin Limo. And I remember waiting for him on the streets of Manhattan, and the first thing I noticed, the limo door opens, and he's got blue jeans on, a t-shirt, this flowing blonde hair, right? But he's barefoot, and he walks the streets of Manhattan barefoot. And I just got to tell you, as a New Yorker, we don't like our skin touching many things. So I'm thinking this guy developed some sort of super skin, right? Like, it's so cool. Well, the very last question in the interview, I'll never forget this. I said, if you could live your life over again, is there anything you would do differently? And he thought about it, he looked at me, and he said, I think I'd start my first business at an earlier age. He said, you know, there's two things, but that's the first thing I'd do. I'd start my first business at an earlier age. And I said, well, didn't you start your first company at the age of 9? And he looked at me, he's like, yeah, pretty good. You did your research. And I said, yeah, all those wasted years, right? I said, come on, what's the next thing? And he said, all right. He goes, well, if I could live my life over again, I guess what I'd do is I would dream bigger. Now, I'm going to be real transparent with you and your listeners. That didn't really sit well with me, because I'm talking to a guy who owns over 400 companies, his own private island. He scores off the charts on happiness tests, right? He's one of the most philanthropic people in the world, and he's telling me if he could do it over again, he would dream bigger, right?
How much bigger?
Well, I got to tell you, though, it stuck with me, because we started to notice a pattern, not just with him, with many of the people that we interviewed. And when I'm trying to teach this to teachers, educators, and even students, I ask them to do this thing. So if as your audience is listening, if it's safe for them to do this, I'm going to ask you to do this. If it's safe, raise your left or your right hand as high as you can. Okay, as high as you can, raise it. Now, without standing up, see if you can raise it 1 inch higher. And if you can, how about one more inch? Now, I do this all over the world. And Steve, the view from my angle is everyone raises their hand high. And when I ask them to raise it one inch higher, everyone does. When I say, how about two? I mean, they're stretching. You can hear the groans and the moans, but they stretch. And then I say, well, think about what I just asked you to do. I asked you to raise your hand as high as you could the first time. And then I said, can you get it one inch higher? And you're looking at me. You're like, yes, Scott, as high as I can. Oh, and here's one more for you. Oh, and here's another inch. And the point is this. See, most people don't understand how good they can be. Most people don't understand their own potential. We've learned throughout our lives not to stretch ourselves. We've learned not to push ourselves. And what Richard Branson and other people that are living lives of extraordinary fulfillment and happiness, what they've learned is that it's in the very nature of stretching themselves that allows them to enjoy the journey of life and to actually achieve more. And so, you know, one of my biggest suggestions to educators is, is to realize this. That their students will rise or fall based on the level of expectation that they set for them. If they raise that expectation high, students will rise to meet them. And if they set the bar low, unfortunately, many will strive to reach that low bar as well. And there's no one that any of us would ever teach. There's no one listening who should ever settle. People need to stop worrying about dreaming too big and missing. What they really need to be afraid of is setting the bar too low, so that they can hit the target, because that leads to a life of settling and disappointment and not coming anywhere close to living to our potential.
That's awesome. And I got to tell you something. You could stop right there with the rest of what we're going to talk about and just focus on this with me for the whole time, because I love this concept and it just spoke to me because there's things, I mean, in my own personal life, at one time in my life when I was young, that sounded bad, didn't it, when I was young? Sorry, people are starting to open the door for me now. It's killing me. But it's one of the things that sounded bad too. Boy, I got anyway. We got one of the things when I was like 8 or 9, I was really into comic books and learning how to draw, and I wanted to be a comic book artist. And I told someone near and dear to me that story, because they were looking at my superheroes that I was drawing and stuff like this. And I had a couple friends who were into it also, and we would create these stories. And what was said was, you can't make much money doing that. I mean, do they really live right? And that, mm-hmm. that stuck with me. I gave it up. You know, and I, even though I stuck it out through a little bit of into high school, it really, really went away by college.
And by the way, I mean, that leads right into the second mindset, which is passion first. I mean, I don't think I've ever met a teacher or a parent that walks around telling their kids they shouldn't follow their passion. It just doesn't happen that way. What's more likely is somebody says, you know, maybe that's something you can do on the weekend, or how about in the summer? Or, you know, maybe your grandma might say to you, well, first you should have some financial security in your life, and then you can pursue your passions. And by the way, all of those things make rational sense. I mean, as we start to prepare young people for the world out there beyond the classroom, they're going to have, hopefully and fortunately, they'll have multiple opportunities. And it's rational to wonder which job might pay you more. You know, where are the benefits going to be better? Where's the room for growth? If you're starting a company, it's certainly reasonable and rational to wonder, well, where are the market trends, right? But it's just that the people that we studied and interviewed, they look at passion first completely differently. They look at these questions and they might ask the question like, if every job paid the same, what job would I choose? If money didn't matter, how would I like to spend my time in my life, right? If I could start any business in the world, what would I do that would make me feel alive every day? And just in talking about this with you, you realize that they take an intrinsic approach. And that's what passion first is really about. And the people that we study that put their passion first, yeah, they look at their strengths and their interests, and then they try and organize their life around those things. And they tend to be happier throughout their life, because we're all gonna hit roadblocks in life. But it's the people that are pursuing their passion that have the perseverance to figure out how to go around some of these obstacles, how to stick with it. And you and I know when we meet people in the world that seem miserable at what they're doing, that's contagious and we don't want to interact with them. And when we find people that love what they're doing, that's also contagious. And it's the people that typically live their passion that put more time in and they grow. And usually they end up being more successful than they ever dreamed possible as well.
It's so awesome because, you know, everything you're talking about there, it's the idea that, because I love that. If we were all paid the same, what is it you would choose to do? And I wonder how many people would be going, oh, I'm out of here, you know, that type of thing. And it's unfortunate because along the way, they got sidetracked for whatever the reason. And, you know, they chose their world that they're in.
But you also have to give yourself permission. And I teach this to educators all the time. Give yourself permission and make sure you teach your students that they can give themselves permission to let their passions evolve. It's very natural to be passionate about something for days, weeks, months, even years. And at some point, the light starts to fade a little bit. It dimmers. And it's okay to move on. Now, it can be scary as an adult when you say, well, how am I going to pay my mortgage? Or how am I going to, you know. But really, when you're pursuing your passion, you know, kids today my own kids would probably cringe if they heard me use the term. But there's a term out there. They call it the side hustle. And I don't know if it's because millennials, because, you know, we know that they're going to need to be able to make some extra money. Statistics show that they're probably not going to make as much as the previous generation. But the side hustle doesn't just have to be about money. It's about how can you activate and integrate your passion into your life on a daily, weekly, you know, even monthly basis. How can you, you know, if you happen to be in a job and you need to be there for security, you know, it may not be responsible to walk out the door, but that doesn't mean you have to give up on your dreams and your passions. It just means you have to work a little harder to make sure that you integrate them into your life.
And I love that advice. I mean, that's exactly right. There are some different programs that I listen to, podcasts to kind of that are focused on that side hustle that you're talking about right off the bat. So I'm very familiar with that term. And you think about it because it's literally, and when you think about it, not in terms of financial, but at least bringing in that passion, that thing that you do have that passion for, and that maybe you're not seeing the ability to make money out of it, or you're not wanting to. You're just trying to put it in your life, which is very. You know, that's so important there. You know, one of the things I want to make sure that I say is that you note in the book that the names of the mindsets were on purpose made simple so they could be remembered. And, you know, I wanted to know if you would talk a little about the uncovering and naming of the mindsets.
So there's a scientific term. It's called a meme. Now, it's not the meme that my kids are talking about and even many adults are talking about on the internet. It's not those kind of memes, although there's probably some similarity in the use of the language. But a meme is sort of like a thought. It's an idea, and it sticks in your mind. And when you least expect it, a meme can influence your thoughts, your beliefs, and your actions. So, for example, most of us learn memes when we're younger. And I'll give one. I bet your audience, you and I won't hear them say this, but I bet you most of them are going to be able to finish this sentence. Okay. So here's an example of a meme. See if you can finish this sentence. Money doesn't grow on. And I pause and I'm sure if they're talking, they're saying trees. And if not, they're thinking trees. And that's a meme. And if I said curiosity killed the, and I pause and I'm sure everybody's thinking or saying cat. Don't make the same mistake twice, right? These are examples of memes. These are things that get passed on generation to generation. Well, a meme in and of itself is not good or bad. But you have to look and say, well, is it helping me live my best life? And I remember as a dad, my boys were much younger. I had them in the toy store once, and I turned my back for a moment. My little one was sitting in the shopping cart with his legs, you know, through the holes. And my older one, they had devised this game. I turned my back for a moment, and I hear, ready, set, go. And I turn around and I see the older one pushing the younger one down the aisle. And the little kid's got his hand out and he's trying to scoop all the toys that he can into the basket, right? And I see this. I'm like both mortified and embarrassed in the same moment. I go running after him. And the first thing that comes out of my mind, I mean, absolutely not rehearsed, was, hey, guys, come on. Money doesn't grow on trees. And you know, I don't know why I said it, but it just felt right in the moment. So we interviewed like 200,000 teenagers and we asked them, what does that saying mean to you? And I can boil down their answer to like one word: scarcity. Like there's not enough to go around. See, because when a kid hears something like that, my own children, really what they were hearing was me saying, no, you're not going to get this. I'm not buying you all these toys. Now, I wasn't, as a parent, trying to teach my kids scarcity. I certainly wasn't. I probably had like this adult message that I was trying to translate for my children. Something like, come on, guys, it takes hard work and effort to get the things you want in life, right? But what happens is when loving adults, parents and educators often try and share some great life lessons, we do it in the form of memes, but they often get lost in translation. And these thoughts, these memes get planted not only in our conscious mind, but in our subconscious. And if you've ever been driving home and you're thinking about something else, I call this thinking and driving, and you're thinking about something else, next thing you know, you're pulling onto your block and you're driving, and you're like, how did I get here? That's because the combination of your conscious thought and your subconscious. Well, many of us have picked up, unfortunately, these memes like, we call them counter mindsets, by the way, because they actually take you in the opposite direction of living a life of joy and fulfillment. Like curiosity killed the cat. I mean, we all know as adults, without curiosity, we wouldn't have lights, right? Don't make the same mistake twice. We know that mistakes are an integral part of success. And so we know this in our rational mind, but in our subconscious, in our little inner child mind, we often take actions based on these counter mindsets. So to your question, not only when we identified the seven mindsets, but we realized we had to name them. We had to name them in a way that would be easy for a young person to understand and grasp. We had to create a new meme. And that's why we chose these names, Everything is Possible. In a sense, we were creating a new lexicon, a new language that schools could use, that once everyone understood the new playing field, then you could say passion first. You could talk about being 100% accountable. I remember the first time we were teaching the seven mindsets to some students, a young man understood 100% accountable. He went up to his teacher. He really wasn't that great of a student. And he got a C on this math test, which actually was pretty good for him comparatively. But he went up to his math teacher and he said, you know, I don't think I was really being 100% accountable and preparing for this test. And I'm wondering if you can give me another opportunity to retake the test. And he used the language of the seven mindsets. And the teacher knew that language. And they both could share in that moment. And it's so important. And I guess the last thing I'd say about this is, oftentimes a lot of people, when they hear the terminology and they just get the first gist of each mindset, they'll say, well, this is common sense. And oftentimes it is. You know, we didn't invent these. We discovered them. We named them. We figured out how to teach them to educators and students. But I like to remind people that common sense is not always common practice. And we have to ask ourselves, if everything is possible, it's so, you know, such common sense, why is it that most people aren't stretching themselves? And if we had more time, I'd go into every little detail with you, Steve. But it's not just understanding them, but it's how do you activate these mindsets as well. That makes the difference.
I love this. You know, and that's why, you know, I'm forcing myself to shut up. It's because I just that little bit that you just talked about could be packaged itself and just spend a lot of time about the idea that, you know, one of the things that we've got to, we're looking at here is these thoughts that, as kids learn how to use these words and think about it, they start recognizing where, they can create their own encouragement and their desire to do well, and they can kind of force out those other ideas that are stuck there. Because it's funny, you know, when you're doing the memes, I'm sitting here going, oh yeah, I can finish those in a heartbeat. And they're told to us as a result of, someone trying to teach us something right. You know, it, you, what you're trying to tell your kids was, hey, look, how am I going to pay for all this stuff? It takes, right. Every time you break something, I got to buy it. That's, you know, that's not what I want to pay for, you know? And, you know, but it instead what starts happening is the kids start thinking, you know, how do I, you know, it starts changing their world a little bit. And I like that you went ahead and explained counter mindsets, because we can get so stuck in that, in some of those memes, and you don't realize it. And I want to speak specifically to the curiosity killed the cat, because the curiosity one there, oh my gosh, man, that's, if without that, I mean, you know, yeah, you might end up, you know, physically, yeah, you might break your leg. Okay, hopefully not. But, you know, you might stumble, you might cause some issues, but that's how we figure out, you know, that's how we learn. That's how we figure out things. That's how we, I don't know, in many cases, that's how we, you know, figure out what it is that we really want to know.
And these, we also labeled them mindsets. I mean, when we were doing the research, it took us several years. We also were trying to figure out what should we call these? I mean, you know, some people on the team felt like these were like universal laws of science. And I said, you know, it's too strong. These are mindsets. These are things that if a person leans into, they can feel the difference in their life. And that's the cool thing about mindset training is, first of all, no one has to know you're doing it, right? So unless you're telling them, but no one has to know you're doing it. And what we found is they work very quickly, that when you apply these strategies, you will feel differently. And we know, you know, if we don't like how we're feeling, we know it. And if something makes us feel better, then it's okay. It's like an encouragement to continue doing more. One of my kids came home the other day, and he said a meme to me. You know, he said it's a dog eat dog.
Nice.
And I always pause just so everyone can, you know, realize that we're all infected with these memes. But it's a dog eat dog world, you know. And he was talking about competition, and I started thinking about it. And, you know, if you ask yourself, well, is it a dog eat dog world? Is it a competitive world? You know, when you think about it, and my son was talking about, you know, you try out for a team and not everybody makes the team. You know, and even in some communities where everybody does make the team, not everybody can be captain. You know, you try out for the play, not everyone makes the play. And even if they do, not everyone's the lead. You know, if you play an instrument, not everyone makes the band or the orchestra. But if they do, not everyone's first chair. We know that, you know, it's kind of rare if you apply to however many colleges, you don't always get in. Right. And even if you have, you know, very rarely is only one person applying for a job. And so we hear something like it's a dog eat dog world, and you go through life validating through experiences that must be true. Right. But then you think about what is it that really brings joy to life? It's relationships with others. And if we go through life with a competitive mindset, which is what that meme might take us down, you know, we look at everybody as competitors and, you know, for you to win, I got to lose and vice versa, then we treat people a certain way. And especially in competitive sports. And there's a video I saw of this kid who he had autism, and he was the manager of the team, and the coach put him in the game just to maybe get some experience in a game. And the team was up by 10, 12 points. There's only a minute left. And every time his teammates passed him the ball, he missed the shot. And on the last possession, it bounced off his hand and went out of bounds. And the interviewer says to the coach, you know, well, do you think he'll just enjoy that he got to be in the game? He says, I hope so. And then something happened. A player on the other team who knew and understood what was going on. They were trying to help this young man with autism get a basket. In a competitive game, he called the kid's attention. He threw him the ball so the kid could make the basket. And the gym went crazy, as they should.
Nice.
And that, to me, is the essence of the we are connected mindset. The third mindset, it's all about seeking ways to empower one another, lifting people up. It's understanding that, you know, in life we achieve things by learning to work with others, through others, for others. You know, if you can achieve your dream alone, you're probably not dreaming big enough. And so all these mindsets fit together. And so, yeah, we can go through life with thinking it's it's a dog eat dog world and look for all sorts of examples to prove that true. But we're not going to be as happy as if we go through life looking for ways to be kind to others, looking for ways to lift others up. Every time I go into a classroom, I say, can we make this a safe place? Can we agree to support one another, help each other, empower each other, help each other get to the next level? You know, if we can agree to that, then we create the environment for growth and kindness. And you never have to talk about you shouldn't be a bully. You just got to talk about we are connected. And that's a positive side, a positive way of making a difference.
That's so powerful in just itself. I mean, the idea of, and you know, hopefully everyone's experienced that at some point, and the power of it, because it does take you beyond the dog-eat-dog world when somebody helps you, whether it's encouraging you to do some program for your own personal growth, or whether it's, you know, hey, let me introduce you to somebody, and they help you get into a network that you may not have had access to before simply because they thought this might be helpful to you. You know, you do with it what you want. And or if it's going back to something when I was, you know, I'll never forget when I was in basic training in the Army. The, you know, one of the cool things in the Army is that sometimes what would happen is that, you know, you get others to kind of pat you on the back and say, you can do this, and then help you do it by either spending time with you so that you could do the amount of pushups you needed to, or be able to make the 5 mile run at 5 miles instead of at, you know, 4.9 when you die, you know, fall, collapse out there. And, you know, and you see that, you don't have to go there though to see that. You see it, that some of the best teachers do this with colleagues. Some of the best teachers do this with their students. Some of the best principals and teachers work together to figure out how to make it a better, environment for the kids to be able to achieve their dreams. And it comes from that sort of connectedness when they throw away that idea that we got to protect what we do for fear it might be stolen.
Steve, what you just talked about is the secret ingredient that helps classrooms and schools thrive. Of course, we have to teach academic skills, right? No question about it. But in my opinion, educators have become better than ever historically at teaching academic skills. I mean, just the tools they have, the training that they have, that's not what's missing in schools. What's missing is, I mean, some of your listeners may know this as social emotional learning, but it's the basic things we're talking about. It's making sure that educators, first of all, I'll just say this, you know, professional development is so important, but I like to think of, I visit schools and I've got a team of trainers that go, we just went to 100 schools in the last 60 days training all of their staff. And we like to think of it as a personal and professional development. There's a great principal I love and admire up the road here. And she has a saying that she uses. She says, you know, if you don't feed the teachers, they'll eat the students. and you know, really what she's talking about is making sure that we empower teachers so that they can be their best.
Yes.
Right? So we love to teach educators the seven mindsets. Educators are some of my favorite people. I married a kindergarten teacher 27 years ago. She got her master's in early childhood education, went on to become a principal later on in life. But so education's critically important to me and my family. And I love working with educators, and my team loves working with educators because we want them to live their best life. But we also want to teach them how to make these connections with their students and to share and talk with one another, to talk about their own dreams together, to talk about their passions, to talk about, you know, even some of the negative thoughts that get in the way of these things. That is what young people need. They need a caring adult who will take the time to talk to them about the things that really matter in their life. And when you do this, by the way, it doesn't mean that you can't talk about science and math and English. They blend right together. And so that's the secret ingredient. Schools that embrace these mindsets or these things that I'm talking about, what they've learned is that these are not programs. This is the fabric and foundation. It's the positive engine that allows a school to run. It's what allows colleagues to seek ways to empower one another. It's what allows a teacher to make a connection with his or her students. That is so meaningful that the bond is there. And educator, I know this, you know, it's going to sound like a joke, but you and I know they don't go into teaching for the signing bonus.
That is correct. Yes.
I was in Texas a few days ago and I used that line, and there was a new teacher that looked around and said, wait, there's a signing bonus? where do I go for that? But we know they're not in for the signing bonus. You're in education because you want to make a difference. you want to have an impact on lives. And you probably are not saying, I want to be the best science teacher. I want to figure out. Not that that's not important, but you really want to help young people live to their potential. You really want to help them live their best life. And the seven mindsets is like a new type of ABCs. You don't just teach it once and you say, that's it. No, we develop programs from preschool through high school. So once you learn the seven mindsets, you continue to apply them not only inside the classroom, but at home and when you go throughout living your life. So that's you said that and it just made me think that's the difference. That's what helps schools thrive.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, one of the things I want to talk about for a minute is in the formatting of the book, one of the things you guys did was you use quotations throughout the book to reinforce a point. And one of the quotes that is used is found, there's lots of them that I love. I mean, I love the very first one from Albert Einstein. And there's a bunch of really cool ones in there. And there's this one who I didn't know who the gentleman was. I looked him up, found out a little bit about him, but, it's in chapter 3. It's at the very beginning. Then chapter 3 is Everything is Possible. And it goes like this. Risk is more than others think is safe. Care more than others think is wise. And I'm going to... I'm putting weird inflections there. So let me just try that one again. It goes like this. Risk more than others think is safe. Care more than others think is wise. Dream more than others think is practical. Expect more than others think is possible. And that's Claude T. Bissell. I love this. Could you talk about this a little bit, about why it was included?
Well, you know, people learn in many different ways. And so if you're teaching, even in the form of a book, you have to use different styles. Quotes can be very effective. What we found is that, again, these seven mindsets have been around through the beginning of recorded history. Not necessarily by the names that we gave them, but the ideas behind them. And so we searched for quotes throughout history by some famous people and some not so famous people that really mirrored these mindsets. Now, in terms of why we selected certain quotes, well, I'll tell you this. Part of the research process, I mean, we were at the room that we are in today was part of the room that I had 10, 12 people doing research for years. And at this one point in time, when we felt like we had the seven mindsets and the team was like, we're done, I said, look, I know we don't walk around in white lab coats, but there is a process in research that's called human phase testing. And in human phase testing, now what we have to do is we've got to figure out, can we teach these mindsets? Can we teach them to kids from all over the world, from different walks of life? And what are we going to need to do to teach them? And so we developed the use of videos and games and activities and storytelling and quotes and all sorts and imagery and all sorts of things. And in that process, we were also testing not only which videos elicited the emotion, but what videos anchored the message. And what, because I mentioned video, I have to tell you this. Research shows, first of all, young people, millennials, love videos, absolutely love videos. And as an educator, when you can find a great video and anchor your message with a video, it's been proven that the impact can increase by 90%. You almost get double the value by using a video in the classroom, which is why we created something we call the Seven Mindsets Resource Hub with thousands of videos and activities for teachers to be able to pull from. It's like a curated Google for social emotional learning and mindsets. So we tested videos. If it didn't work, we got rid of it. We tested quotes. That quote that you're talking about, the reason that's in the book is because during our research phase, we had five different teenagers from around the world. One young man in particular from London named George said, I love this quote. This so embodies the mindset of everything is possible. It reminds me that if I want to live a greater life, then I can't do what everybody else is doing. I have to do something just a little bit more. Risk a little bit more than others think is safe. Dream a little bit more. And it sort of goes to that activity where I said, raise your hand 1 inch higher. So, I mean, I would encourage any principal, if you have a plan that you're working on with your team, get your team together and say, can we stretch this 1 inch higher? If you're working on goals personally, just look at any goal you have. If you think you can achieve it, well, you're going to end up, you know, just trying to shoot for, you know, hitting the mark and you're not pushing yourself enough. So stretch it a little bit. And this is more art than science. I always like to to tell people that when you're pushing yourself a little bit, think of it like as butterflies. You know, when you get butterflies in your stomach, it's because you think you can do it. You're not sure. It's that butterfly feeling. So you want to stretch for like the inch or two. Sometimes we know what anxiety feels like, and if that's what we're getting, then we need to maybe pull, you know, maybe that was 3 inches. We need to pull back just a little bit.
I love this. I mean, right now you got me all. I'm focused on all kinds of things that, you know, I think I could do a little bit more there. I think I could, because, you know, getting back to this quote, one of the things that I love about it to go along with George is that this is, you know, it just speaks to the things that I know that, you know, you like to take risks and you go and you push yourself and you go do these things that, because it really speaks to the idea that some people really aren't going to understand why you're doing that. And they may even try and pull you back because.
And by the way, and this is one of the things, they pull you back because they love you and care about you. See, here's the I just ask your listeners, if you've ever had a goal or a dream that was important enough to you to work towards and you put effort into it and it didn't come true, you know, if it's safe to do so, you raise your hand and I'll raise my hand. You know, if you've ever had more than one dream that you pursued that didn't come true, you raise your other hand. Steve, I'm sitting so I can raise both my legs at the same time. If we don't have dreams that we pursue that didn't come true, we're not human, right? We're not risking enough. So we all know what that feels like. And just pause there for a moment and think to yourself, the pain we must have felt in different times of our lives when something that mattered to us didn't come true. And what do you think we said the next time that inner voice, you know, the one that we wish wouldn't show up so often.
Yes.
What do you think our inner voice said to ourselves the next time we had a big idea we wanted to pursue? You know, so we want to protect ourselves from that pain. Our brains, we've survived as a species because our brains want us to stay comfortable. Our brains don't want us to experience the pain of disappointment. And once we experience that as adults, when somebody we love or care about maybe shares a dream with us that we think might be a little too far outside of their reach, maybe a little too unrealistic, what do we say to them because we love and care about them? So you get my point. So we learn not to stretch ourselves. And what that quote is sharing is a reminder how important in life it is to stretch. And the same brain that wants to keep us comfortable also releases legal drugs in our system when we do stretch ourselves. You know, the butterflies of you see somebody you want to go talk to and you're scared you might get rejected, but you get that feeling of being alive is what happy people strive for. That's what they live with, that feeling of, wow, it's about the journey of life. And we get that feeling when we stretch ourselves, when we try something new, when we read a new book, when we go and talk to somebody.
That's so cool. And you're so right. I mean, that's just it exactly. And I just love this whole formatting of this because the quotes that are in there, besides that quote, because there's so many more. When you read the book, you'll see and how well they fit with the different chapters and such, and those that are in the middle of the chapters and everything. But this one just spoke to me so loudly, and many of them do the same. And I just think that it's a neat way to get people to think that there are others thinking about this. It's not just, you know, it's not just something that somebody's come up with. It's because sometimes when you read a book, you forget about all the research and the time and effort that's gone into making it. And when you start seeing that there's been people throughout time who have these focuses, who have these thoughts, and then you start realizing, well, maybe I need to, you know, I need to put a different type of blinder on or a different type of, you know, headset on that's going to let me, you know, kind of filter out that counter mindset and focus on what I really want to try and achieve and move forward. So I just love that formatting there. You know, one of the things that I got to ask you is, do you have a favorite in the mindsets?
They're like all my children, but, you know, but I do. I think my favorite is, let me put it to you this way. We have a quote of the day that we send out, and I know these mindsets well, because obviously I was part of the research team. I helped co-author the book with my colleague, Jeff Waller. But every morning, one of my favorite things to do is to look at my email and read the morning mindset that my team sends out. For on the East Coast, we get it a little before 7 a.m. And every day, it's a different mindset. And I read the mindset, I read the quote, I look at the image, and I just anchor in a moment to see how it connects with me. And I'd say 70% of the time, it actually has like meaning in my life in that very moment. And sometimes it's just, you know, it's a miss. The point is that, you know, each one of the mindsets means something to me at different times. But to answer your question, I love the live to give mindset because for me, the live to give mindset is about, it's a couple of things. It's a reminder that the greatest gift we can give the world is to just be our best selves. So it's just a reminder every day that strive to be your best, right? That's the first part of live to give. But the second part is it's a reminder that real joy in life comes when we do something for someone else. If you're ever feeling down, the fastest way to feel better is to do something kind for another person. If you ever feel like you're so broke, you don't know how you're going to pay your bills, you don't know, you know, whatever that is, actually one of the best things you can do is to help someone else because you send a message to your brain that as tough as things might be for me, I'm still able to help someone else. Live to give is about identifying what you're passionate about and connecting it to causes that you believe in and figuring out how to organize your life so that what you're doing every day matters. You make a difference. I like it. It's a reminder to almost redefine the term success. Instead of thinking about how can I be successful in life, it's about how can I be significant? How can I make sure my life matters? And on the broadest, biggest scales, it's like when maybe you're the entrepreneur Blake Mikowski and you start a company called Tom's Shoes. And you say, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. And every time a customer buys a pair of shoes, I'm going to give a pair of shoes to a child in need who doesn't have shoes. They can go to school. They could stay healthy, right? That's like one of the biggest manifestations of live to give. You know, you go to work every day and you're making a difference. But another version of that are the thousands of people who say, I want to work for Tom's Shoes. You know, maybe you're in the accounting department because you love math and you say, but I want to make a difference. I want to do math at a company that's doing this. Or maybe you set up a small nonprofit. So those are other ways we can manifest live to give in our life. And it's also giving a hug before you leave your house. It's holding the door for somebody. It's the millions of acts of kindness we can administer throughout our life. That's live to give. And a lot of people want to leave a legacy in their life. You know, when they're gone, they want people to remember them for certain things. But we often forget that legacies are made by what we do with our lives, what we do with the moments each and every day. So I'm just honored to be here with you. And I hope that some of the educators that are listening, that they get affirmation that what they chose to do with their life to make a difference every day, that's probably one of the greatest contributions that they can make in this world.
That is so powerful. And I thank you so much for that, Scott. That's just, and I was getting ready to say that with where you were coming to a close before you said what you just said. But thank you so much I got to tell you this. It's funny because I had read a article one time that talked about, and I think it comes back to that whole pay it forward thing from a bunch of years ago where they started talking about that idea. But one of the things that they talked about is when you do something nice for somebody that you didn't have to do, that they tend to do something nice for somebody else, that it has a little payoff in it. And it's funny because I was taught a long time ago, you open doors for people. And so I opened doors. And it's funny because it was pretty cool because one of the things I've noticed is that when you open the door for somebody, if you go out of your way to open the door for somebody, if there's somebody coming behind them, they look and, you know, and there's no scientific evidence to what I'm about to tell you, but I've noticed this a lot, that they actually will stop and they'll wait for that person to come up. And they'll hold it since you, and it's nice. And you kind of know what they're thinking. It's sure. Got to be because you just held it open for them. They weren't expecting it. And I think that idea there is so important. And it's so ingrained in so many teachers because, and educators, because that's why, you know, that's why they got, like you said earlier, it's not that, you know, that little extra money that they got for a signing bonus or something like this or that non-existent signing bonus.
There's another term I've heard that applies to this. It's like psychic income. You know, we all can be wealthy in the idea of being kind to others. And there's something very palpable. It's contagious. It's catchy. And it's not to do it for the for getting it back, you know, to say, well, now you owe me. You know, right. I did this for you, now you owe me. It's just doing it, and you send out this positive energy. It does make you feel well. But you have to remember that there's a cycle to this. And one of the things that we teach, because the seven mindsets, we've also developed them into each mindset has four learning objects to make it easier to activate. And someone can say, I'm gonna try this particular strategy, and that might work great. Or they can apply, you know, different strategies. But there's one of them under Live to Give that's called Receive Gracefully, because there is a cycle to giving, you know, and you can inadvertently break that cycle. Because some people go through life feeling like, you know, they shouldn't accept charity, or it's more important if they do it on their own. But if we know how it feels to give, when you don't receive gracefully, you're robbing someone else of giving. And when you do receive gracefully, you create this this nice circular flow of energy. And there's a saying that, you know, your attention goes. Your energy flows where your attention goes. And so I do like to, you know, we get these, I don't know, it's maybe getting a little too foo-foo here, but you get these really nice feelings when you are kind to people, when you do nice things. And that's like this positive energy.
Ah, awesome. That is so awesome. I love it. And right now you got me on this planet of, I got to go out and do something nice for somebody. So one of the things I want to make sure that I ask you is, if you were to think of one takeaway that you would like a reader to remember from the seven mindsets, what would that be?
Wow.
I know. I got it narrowed down.
I would say, you know, one takeaway, maybe this idea. That learning the seven mindsets might be eye-opening, but it's living them that becomes life-changing. You know, even if you're a listener today and you like some of the things that we were talking about, don't let it stop there. You have to take action. And a lot of people confuse activity, you know, busyness with productivity. So you have to take focused action. So you just take one of the things that we talked about early on when I said, you know, raise your expectations a little bit, set a little higher goal, dream a little bigger. If you really want to act on that and not just nod today from your car, your love chair, wherever you're listening to this, you know, if you really want to take action, then actually do that and say, well, what is a goal or dream I have? And if nothing comes to mind, start there. You know, you have to have, think about it, if you had a magic wand and you could wave it, what is something that you would like to see come true in your life? What's something that, you know, by the way, I don't know, 92% of people who set goals every year fail to achieve them. And the average adult has the same goals on his or her list for like 10 years in a row. So it's not that people don't know what they want, it's that they don't know how to achieve what they want. Yeah. And it begins with having an idea of something you want, but then you have to take some action. You have to lean in. You have to do something. And if you have a goal or a dream, then put this into action and stretch it just a little tiny bit. I think you'll feel better. And statistically speaking, you have a greater chance of achieving more with your life if you do that.
Good stuff. Good stuff. So what I'd like you to do now is I'd like you to share, you know, about the services, programs, and resources that Seven Mindsets offers schools and school systems. Could you do a little bit of that right now?
Sure. So what, you know, obviously I'm a huge fan of social emotional learning, and I believe the seven mindsets are an important component of that. And we think that to help schools thrive, that if educators, if school leadership, if they understand these mindsets, if they apply them from a personal perspective, you know, and a professional perspective, they can bring these mindsets into their school buildings, into their classrooms, in as little as 30 minutes a week, whether it's kindergarten, preschool, all the way through high school. We have different little lesson plans and courses and videos and resources. And so we have right now about 150,000 students a week learning and applying these seven mindsets. And principals and leadership teams share them. They theme their school. They share quotes of the day. They paint the mindsets on walls. They have parent nights themed with the mindsets. We do personal and professional development workshops throughout the year for schools. We have this Seven Mindsets portal, which has thousands of videos and courses, games, activities. So I just happen to have this incredible team. They're my dream team. And all they focus on every day is how can we help schools get to the next level? How can we raise teachers to be the best they possibly can be, personally and professionally? And how can we help give them the tools and support them? I basically have a company of educators that have designed programs and content for educators. So I have teammates that go and they speak at conferences, they speak at principal events, they speak at educational conferences. We do personal professional development, and we have a variety of programming that helps schools thrive.
Excellent. And I got to tell you, once you find just the website itself, you're going to spend a lot of time from watching videos to reading and looking at all this cool stuff. And it's worth your time. If you just found an inkling of what we talked about today with the book, I think you really should check that out. So if a listener would like to learn more about the seven mindsets, what would be the best way?
Well, you know, what I'd like to do, I mean, hopefully we've gotten a lot of people excited about the book. And frankly, I don't do this to sell books. We've sold lots of books, but I don't do it to sell the books. And so I'd like to do something special for them. I'm going to give, our company website is mindsets.com. But if they go to sevenmindsets.com/Scott, S-C-O-T-T, they're going to get to a special page on our website. And if they want to give some information, just answer a few questions, they can get an instant download of the book, a free download, PDF version of the book, and they can read for themselves the things we're talking about. If they want to get the free quotes of the day, they can check a box. If they don't want that, don't check the box. And there's a comment section in there. If they want to comment on our program, what we talked about, if they want to say, hey, they're doing something in their school, if they want somebody from my team to show them the Seven Mindsets portal and give them a free demo, my team would be happy to do that. But if they go to sevenmindsets.com/Scott, they can put in their information. It's going to ask for like a special code. So, Steve, what kind of code should we give them? Should they say podcast? Should they say Steve? What do you want them to put in there?
How about teaching, learning, leading K-12?
You want them to remember all that stuff and type it in?
Never mind. I like your that would be bad, wouldn't it? Which way did it go? Was it learning or leading? Yeah, how about let's do Steve? How about
Steve?
That?
Okay, so it's not case sensitive. Where it says enter a special code, you put Steve there. And then thanks to Steve and this great podcast, you're going to get a free download. And it'll come right away of the Seven Mindsets book. You can see more about what we've been talking about.
Very cool. Thanks, Scott, for doing that. We'll use my name as a code. Don't forget that. Steve, and it doesn't matter with the...
It's not case sensitive.
Not case sensitive. Awesome. And by the way, I'll have all the links to the website and how to get to Scott's page in my show notes. So that's all you got to do. So if you're driving right now, and hopefully you weren't raising your hand while you're driving, the other people around you might think you're nuts, but I'll have that all in my show notes so you can go straight there. So thank you very much. So I got two final questions, and these are personal questions I like asking my guests. So the first one goes like this. Scott, if you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
Wow, that's a great question. I think what I would suggest that they do is that they realize that what most young people need is a caring adult in their life who oftentimes, by showing that they care, that somebody who steps up for them and talks to them about the things that really matter to them in their life, that they might actually be able to positively influence that child's life forever. There's nothing in the world like a teacher who can make an impact on you. I've got two boys. They're older. One just graduated college and the other is in his senior year of high school. And I'm most grateful for the teachers in their lives. And so I just remind all these new teachers that you're talking about, I'd say, remember how powerful that is. And it's not so much about how great you can teach math, reading, writing, history, science. It's how you can relate to your students in a way that really makes a difference to them, that sees them as a person, helps raise them up, And if you demonstrate kindness to them and really connect where you're willing to talk about your life, your dreams, your passions as well, I think that makes all the difference in the world.
I love that. That is so awesome. Thank you so much. Incredible advice right there. Here's my last one. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If given a chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
So important. First teacher that comes to my mind was actually a college professor, Dr. Mary Mulvihill. She was the dean. I went to Fordham University in New York. She was the dean of the business school. And when I was there, I remember I wanted an entrepreneurship class, and they didn't have it at Fordham at the time. This goes back quite a ways. They have a great entrepreneurship program now. I wanted to set up an entrepreneurship club. I got denied the first time. They said, this is a Jesuit liberal arts school. Entrepreneurship doesn't belong here. And I got denied the entrepreneurship club. I went to the dean of the business school. She's like, why don't I be your advisor? Let's see if they'll tell me no.
Nice.
And it helped. So we got the entrepreneurship club. She agreed to create the first entrepreneurship class at Fordham University, which meant that she also had to teach it. And so I was the first student to take the class at Fordham, and she was very unconventional. At the end of the year, you didn't have to wait for your grade. She would tell you your grade in front of everyone. And so she says, all right, everyone, she's giving out A's and B's. And then she says, but there's one special student in the class, Scott, come up front. I'm thinking it's got to be an A plus. And she said, everyone, the only real entrepreneur in the class is Scott Schickler. And Scott, you've earned a C plus. And I said, actually, she gave me a D. And I said, a D? And she said, yeah, a D, because you're the real entrepreneur in this class. I just wanted everyone to know. And I joked with her for many years after, you could have made the same point and given me a C.
Yeah.
You didn't have to lower my GPA. But no, she made such an impact on me. And there are others. But Mary, thank you so much.
So cool. Thank you so much for sharing, Scott. That's amazing. I like that. Let's see them tell me no.
Yeah.
Nice. Scott, thank you so much for joining me today. The 7 Mindsets to Live Your Ultimate Life, written by you and Jeff Waller, is an incredible, powerful book. And as you heard today, audience, it's just, you hear the power and the passion in Scott's voice, and it's all right there in the book. You're going to love it. And, it's so engaging. It makes you think about you, your children, your family, and your students as the person reading it. I mean, you're thinking about how you could put all this into your daily life and change how you're interacting with people all around you. It makes you think about what you could do to change your focus as well as those of others. I'm wishing the best in all that you do. Take care.
Thank you, Steve, so much. My pleasure to be here with you.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is excited to be a member of Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and hosts. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends.